So I always said, first and foremost, no matter what, become a doctor, become a shoe shiner. I don't care. Be funny. Because that way, at the very least, I know you get it. I know you get life. You kind of see things. You're grounded. You kind of get it.
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now here's your host, Art Eddy.
This week's The Art of Fatherhood podcast is being brought to you by HBO Max. One of my favorite series growing up as a kid was Batman the Animated Series. Now, thanks to HBO Max, I get to watch this series with my kids and show them shows that I used to watch when I was their age. For family movie night, you know we're always watching Shazam and the Lego Batman movie. You can discover new movies, beloved series, and epic originals that your whole family will love. There is content streaming only on HBO Max, like the new hit movie, The Suicide Squad by James Gunn, that was released earlier this month. HBO Max is where HBO's fearless and groundbreaking programming meets an iconic collection of beloved entertainment, including Warner Brothers' larger-than-life storytelling. Not only can you stream movies from your favorite devices, but you can download them and take them on the go. Some of my favorite movies I like to download and take with me is Man of Steel, Zack Snyder's The Justice League, Doom Patrol, and one of my all-time favorites, The Dark Knight. Sign up for HBO Max now. Start streaming today using the link hbom.ax/fatherhood. Go now and sign up for HBO Max to start streaming every title I mentioned and so much more. What's going on, everybody? Art Eddy here for another Art of Fatherhood podcast, and so happy to have Anthony Albee. Thanks for taking time to chat with me, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, big fan of your work. My family and I love your show on Netflix, Family Reunion. It's back. It's coming up with some more episodes. One of the things I think people love about shows is how, if they can believe that, like, that's a family, right? And you guys bond. And I love watching an interview talking with some of your co-stars. You, Tia, and Loretta were just saying, like, the people on the show, like the crew, like, all right, great, I'm glad you guys were talking, but we need to film, right?
Right.
It was almost like you said, it was like the first day of school back again. We just, hey, what's going on? How's your summer? And that show is in the series, man. So talk a little bit about building that chemistry. I know it's for a few seasons now, but talk about building that chemistry every season.
It's crazy because it just carries over. You know, typically you think like, oh yeah, the first season, everybody's excited. It's a new series. We all have jobs, so we're pumped. But I think season two, you know, with the pandemic and everything that happened, it was like coming back together. Before the pandemic, I think we filmed, what, 4 episodes? It was like 4 weeks. And then the pandemic hit and we went into quarantine and everything. But those first 4 weeks, we couldn't film. Like, we were just the biggest talkers. We were like kindergarten kids. Like, we're just laughing between takes, literally to the point where Meg had to come over and go, guys, I know, I get it. It's a lot of fun. We got to get to work. So, you know, I think what it is we all know where we are. We all kind of understand what the show is. And I think we enjoy genuinely each other's company. And that's rare. It is. It's very rare. I mean, there's a lot of times that you work with people where it's not necessarily a bad thing where you're not into the other person, but, you know, like they are into, you know, rock and roll and heavy metal, and you're like into like R&B soul or, you know, hip hop or whatever. It's just like different tastes, right?
Yeah.
For some reason, we all came on the show and just from the beginning, everybody just was really on the same page. Not that we agree on everything. I mean, Loretta definitely disagrees with my style half the time. she calls me out on it. She's like, is that a skirt? I'm like, it's a fashion statement. She's like, it's a skirt. I'm like, all right, well, whatever. but I think at the end of the day, we all appreciate what each person brings to the table. And I think with that comes kind of that respect for each other and just the fun and the knowing where the cage is and being able to play within that, you know?
Yeah. So
that's the biggest part of it for us, that we go to work every day ready to play.
Yeah. and it comes off that way because, again, like, you can spot the authenticity and it just comes natural for you guys and, like, you know, portraying you guys are a family. And heck, man, you guys talked about so many great things, some fun things, some serious things. Oh. I love the fact that they're like joking about one of her friends was saying like, oh, you know, my wife was calling me, stop being a Karen, right? And like, yeah. You have those moments where you're like, yeah, like, and you guys present topics, whether they're serious, fun, family, caring, or just serious topics in a great way. And you guys act like normal parents would act, right?
Yeah.
So
I'm wondering, like, how much pride do you and your colleagues have for, especially like right now, representation and all that stuff? So people would be like, man, that's just like looks like my family, right? I mean, I'm a white dude saying this, so for years I've, you know, seen the heroes and all that other stuff, right? Yeah. But that must mean something for you if you guys have a great show. All like all dynamics, whatever your walks of life are tuning into this show, right? Yeah. Talk a little bit like how much pride you guys must have for the show, man.
Well, yeah. I mean, just kind of piggybacking off of what you just said. One, I think Meg and the writer's room, they have a real ear to the ground. And I think they have no ego when it comes to figuring out what is current, what do we need to be talking about? What are terms and like the kind of modern day vernacular that we need to use? Like what words are kids using now? What words are parents using? Like what philosophies in parenting are kind of coming through? All of that jumbled together helps to create this dialogue in this world and the things that work. So two things. One, I think the best writers, especially for this genre of family, know how to write jokes or topics or plot lines that are the ones that are meant for the kids are meant for the kids, right? The ones that are meant for the parents and to make the parents laugh, it's a small window that flies just above a kid's head, but hits a parent right in the face. You know what I mean? So a kid's laughing and they don't know what they're laughing about, but the parents are like, that's funny. Like, yeah. Is it refers to a pop culture reference from their childhood, or it's something they've been through where it's like, I know he wanted waffles and he threw himself on the floor this morning again. So it's very much like that. And then in relation to what you said, as far as like being a white guy and still being able to relate to the show, I'm a big Will Smith fan. So I it's clear I've modeled myself after a lot of his comedy, just because I love the genius in his work and the things that he's able to do. And one of the things he said that always stuck with me was that when you can tell a joke and Black people are laughing and white people are laughing, but for two completely different reasons, then you've got something special. And I think that's the thing, is that Black people watch this show and they're just like, oh yeah, I got a Daniel in my family. Or like, oh yeah, my grandmother was just like that. And white people can laugh and go, oh my God, that's hilarious. We had something that happened like that with us too. You're bringing people together, because all of a sudden you're not noticing like, oh, we're different and like the cultures are different, so we don't really interact. You start to appreciate the fact that like Black, white, green, purple, parents are parents. And we all go through these things where, whether it's our daughter wanting to wear too much makeup or not acknowledging like a death, and or a son, you know, getting picked on at school and not really being able to stick up for himself, or, you know, all of those things, relationship issues, all of it, it's all relatable that we as human beings just go through. And I think that's the thing that we've tapped into, which is something that they did in the 90s, like those sitcoms tapped into, where everybody, my wife, you know what I mean? For instance, she remembers all that. She's white. She remembers all that stuff where she's just like, oh yeah, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and Family Matters, those were all my favorite shows. And I'm like, really? Are you really? And she was like, yeah, that's what we watched. And that's the magic of it. So I think that's what this show has done, is it's kind of captured that idea of being able to make two or several different groups of people laugh for many reasons.
No doubt. Yeah, I mean, TGI, like just talking about like Family Matters and all, like TGIF, right, on ABC had like maybe Full House and Family Matters, all those shows, right? And, you know, I had a chance to chat with Jaleel White. Just like the importance of that show, right? And just, and again, more especially at that time, it's like everybody can relate to it. And Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, man, I'm a big sneakerhead. And when he was rocking the Grape Fives, I was like, dude, that's amazing, right? Like, and even they came out with a colorway that like I couldn't get on the sneaker app because it went really quickly. But like, as I digress, but no, your show is really cool. And certain things that you guys talked about, whether you're getting pulled over or just for no reason, right? And you guys talk about it in a way that like maybe opens up doors or ears or just minds being like, oh yeah, that you did nothing wrong. Right. And all of these things. And you said it comes with the writer's room and all that, but you got, not only do the writers have their ears to the ground, but you guys do too. You guys have families, you guys have friends, you guys see what's going, you see what's going on in these past few years. Right.
Yeah.
You guys at this point, because of the chemistry, because of how you guys work together, do you guys kind of talk, even like the kid actors, like, do you guys talk about, hey, maybe my character should do this? Like, what is that room like, that, you know, just like, do you guys give your ideas and be like, hey, maybe we should kind of have a show that like depicts this or talks about this topic?
Mm-hmm. It happens often. I remember the first season, you know, this was my first series, right? So I naturally came in and there was two ways to approach it. I could have approached it and come in and just been like, I'm just going to write what they say and kind of go with that and not really disrupt anything. But the philosophy that I took was, I'm here and I want to try and make it as authentic to me as possible. And the reason why that's important, why it needs to be authentic to me, is because I'm the one performing it. So if I don't believe it and I can't imagine it, or my BS meter goes off where it's like, this isn't real, or this doesn't go. That's a real thing. That's like a real term that we use. Where it's nice. That doesn't fly. Then I can't really honestly portray it. And I think the reason why people look at us and they say, wow, they really are like that, or they really believe it, is because the things that we put in the show, the writer's room that they put in the show, and the things that we contribute are real. And we believe what we're saying. And we understand what we're saying at the very least. If my character, for instance, if Moe's has a philosophy on something that I don't agree with, it doesn't necessarily mean like I'm not gonna be able to portray that. It just means that now they've done it in such a way that I understand, Anthony understands what Moe's means. So now I can portray that because I understand his point of view.
Yeah.
And that's the difference, you know what I mean? So we are often, they look to us and go, how does that sound to you? Does that feel real to you? Does that, you know, and or we'll come up to them and be like, Coco and Moe's just wouldn't, like, I wouldn't talk to Coco like that just because we have this relationship like this or like that. And other times we'll compliment them and say, you know, I never really thought of it that way. That's awesome. And they listen to us for the most part, you know, and I think that kind of collaboration just can do nothing but help and uplift the entire production.
Yeah, 100% agree. Because again, we're big fans of the show. And what you said though too about like, how awesome if everyone, especially in real life, had that mentality, like you said, for your character. Like, I wouldn't agree with what he's doing, what Moe's doing, but you know what? Let me learn why he's doing this, right? Right. Let me learn the why before I react, and then we'll see what's going on.
I'll tell you this. Anthony Hill, who was the head writer for season one, and he wrote a lot of season two. He's an amazing writer. I love his perspective on things, right? So he's the EP on our show, too. But he told me, he goes, you know, it's funny because people want to judge and immediately they want to make it a thing where it's just like, there's no room for gray. It's just black and white. Not race, but metaphorically.
Like, yeah, I know. I got you.
and he's like, it's just, that's the way it is. And he goes, for instance, take Lex Luthor, right? And I'm all Superman. I'm like, yeah, Superman's good and Lex Luthor is bad. And he goes, is he? Or is Lex Luthor looking at Superman and going, I appreciate all the good stuff he's able to do. And I appreciate all the stuff he's able to do, but what happens when this guy wakes up in a bad mood one day and we're all done? I just think we should be able to protect ourselves from that. And I just think that I need to be able to protect humanity. So I'm going to use my money and my resources to protect humanity. When you look at it from that perspective, Lex Luthor, even though I'm still like, oh, he's a bad guy, because he's going to be Superman's amazing, you can still appreciate why he's doing it.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? And that, for the layman, that is the kind of key or the little gateway where the actor kind of slips in and is like, I can take on this character now because I understand his point of view and I can defend that. You know what I mean? That's something that you can defend. I'm not necessarily against Superman. I'm protecting humanity, you know? And I think, and it's like that thing of coming at everything from a perspective of love instead of hate. I don't hate Superman. I love humanity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And trying to figure it out in that way. So.
Love that analogy. Love that story. And especially too, like with the different DC characters and different, like, you know, the what if stories, like what happens if Superman landed in Russia, you know, during the, like they had those things and it's like, all right, we got to protect ourselves. So yeah, right. I love it.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, okay. You know what I mean? Like, whose side is he on? It's like humanity side or like a country.
Yeah. So one more question before we get into fatherhood. You know, I know we were talking earlier about like, you know, all right, let's settle down. We have to act on all this stuff. But like, are there certain times where you guys almost try and break someone else? Because again, I know you guys are doing there for a job, but like, are there certain times you're like, today we're going to get her, we're going to get him, or something along those lines, right? But
there are times that I go into a scene where I'm like, this is a loss for me if I don't make Tia laugh or if I don't make Tia like break. You know what I mean? And so I try to do like the most like kind of random thing that she wasn't expecting. And it's always hilarious because you'll see her and she'll react and she'll just be like, you know, we like freak out and then eventually she'll break or something like that. But we always do that. We always try and kind of one up each other or kind of have that fun with each other. Because when you do that, the only people that win are you guys. Like, you win. Yeah. You get to see all that stuff. So yeah, we prank each other all the time. I'm kind of a big culprit of that. I just like to do it from football. It's like leftover from football. Like, I constantly want to just like mess with people.
Yeah. So
it's just like, it's a thing that I enjoy doing. And they do it to me too. So.
One more thing too, because our family loves to read, our family loves history and all that. And again, learning more about other people's history and other sides of history, and hopefully things are more coming out in a way that like everyone should learn about everybody's history, right? When you guys go into Madeir's history and just things that she experienced in the past, bravo to that, man, because that brings in a way where it comes, it doesn't feel like it's being force-fed. It's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful history, and that character is where she's going. So, again, I know that might be a small detail, but our family, we, like, we because it's Netflix and you can kind of binge shows and whatever, but, like, they'll watch it over again. We'll sit down and watch it with them, with them over and over again. But, like, that history aspect is fantastic, man.
Well, I think, Neil deGrasse Tyson, right, when he's when he talks about science and when he talks about things that are supposedly above people's heads, where it's just, like, these complicated – you know, physics and astronomy and all these other things. He goes, the easiest way to teach someone is to tell them a story. You're not going to remember that the sun is this many degrees hot and that it can burn this and this and this, but you will remember that if you put a raw pie on a windowsill, it, if you were this close to the sun, it would cook in 5 seconds. People remember that. And then with that, they'll associate the number of being like, oh yeah, the sun is this and this hot. That's how you tell a story. So I think Meg does a perfect job of that. And she loves telling like the historical kind of stories you can tell from season one and then a couple of episodes in season two. She really likes to kind of portray our history that way. And I think that's her way of contributing to this movement of being like, this is what it is. This is the story of who we are. We're not sitting here trying to force it down your throat or advocate or do any of this. It's more of just like, this is what the story is.
Yeah.
Entertaining, isn't it? And you learn something at the same time. So I think that's the most important thing to take away.
You learn something and all of a sudden become more sympathetic, empathetic, and you're like, hey, everyone's got a story, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So love it. Especially the reason why I wanted to bring you on here, Sarah, is not to talk about your great series, but also fatherhood. People follow you on social media. They know that, you know, you're a family man. They, you know, you love living that fatherhood lifestyle. So take me back when you found out you're going to be a dad. What was going through your mind, man?
Oh, God, that was crazy. Yeah, my daughter, when we found out, we had already planned our honeymoon. And so we were like, okay, do we want to continue to go? And so, yeah, we eventually went. My wife, for that reason, will never want to go back to Italy again. Because she had more croissants and gelato, and that's all she could eat that she could ever deal with. But in any case, finding that it was such a big thing for me, because I don't know why, I was one of those weird kids who, since I was young, I always wanted to be like a dad, and I always wanted to feel that kind of, it was more of just wanting to feel that kind of unconditional love and to be like, oh, this, I made this person and I just want to like see it, you know what I mean? So for me, it was such an exhilarating and like just an exciting, and I just started to think of all the possibilities, and I started to kind of like go down my rabbit hole. And I'm a very type A kind of like, you know, everything is in its place, organized, and like having this thing. So literally the next day I already started with my wife. I was like, okay, strollers. I narrowed it down to five. These are the top five. Now, if you're looking for speed and you're looking for comfort, it's two different things. You're going to have either bumpy or you can go fast. It's one of the, you know, and I just started to go, and I'm like, all right, yourself, like, you have to make sure it's like cribs. So I got into it. You know what I mean? And immediately like bought the paint. I started the nursery. I like immediately got rid of my office, which is a whole nother thing I got to get into, like why that was so easy. So it's just, that was it for me. I was ready and willing to kind of accept this mantle of being a father. I knew I didn't want to be a father to like 12 kids. I definitely wanted to be a dad. And I definitely,
you don't want to create your own football team, like your offensive side? You don't want to do that now?
Maybe six-man Texas football, but that's as close as it's going to get. but yeah, I wanted a girl. I did. And my mom died when I was 20. And I remember thinking to myself, like, she's going to come back. So, like, it's definitely going to be a girl. Like, my first kid's going to be a girl, no doubt. And it was. And it worked out. But I wanted a girl and I wanted a boy. And I just wanted to play with them and have these life experiences with them and kind of explore life at that level. Like, go down to their level and be like, oh, that is a bug. What is that? You know what I mean? You know what I mean? And just get in there and have that kind of wonder that you lose as an adult. I tell my wife this all the time, and it's kind of the statement that keeps me centered, and it's a weird statement, but it's like Kanye West, which I hate quoting Kanye right now, but it's this idea of never lose your dinosaur, right? little kids, when you ask them what they want to be, a kid will spew off and be like, I want to be a dinosaur, because he has no idea of limits. He has no idea that that's a weird thing or that's not possible. You know, it's the same thing, that paperclip test that they gave to kids, where they're like, all right, here's a paperclip, do something with it. And they just start spewing off 40 or 50 questions where they're like, well, can the paperclip fly? Can it be thicker? Can it be thinner? Can I straighten it out? Can I do this? Can I do that? Can I break it into pieces? Like, it's things that adults never think of, because we immediately have compartmentalized and put like these borders around ourselves. And I think it's a very, to toot my own horn, it's a very wise thing to be around little kids like that and see their perspectives, because all it can do is just make me a better actor, to where now I look at something and I just start asking these random questions without boundaries or borders, and just being like, what if the character did this? Well, what if he did that? And what happens here? And 90% of them get shot down. Meg's like, Anthony, shut up. Like, no, we're not doing that. But the ones, the 10% that does get through is gold. And it's moments that people remember that are quoted back to me when I'm like walking and going to get eggs at Pavilions or something. You know what I mean? So it's the fun thing about being a dad, is it just opens you up so much to so much more, that it doesn't have to be this thing where it's like, I'm a reluctant dad and I'm babysitting the kids today. It's like, no, I'm not. I'm having fun with the kids today. You know what I mean? I enjoy it. I look forward to it. It's like, I hate that. Oh, you got babysitting duty? I'm like, who's paying who?
Yeah.
Who's getting paid to be a babysitter? Like, this is my kids. You know what I mean? So it's crazy. But
Anthony, there's a group, because, you know, just being in this parenthood circle and all this other stuff, I have a bunch of great dad groups, and one of them is the At Home Dad Network, and they have a T-shirt that says dads aren't babysitters, right? So what you said right there is fantastic. They love to hear that. So I'm gonna give them
that's a all shout. You do, man. I've been getting your nails painted and, you know, laying on the hot turf. Getting a muddy belly to look at a lizard. Good for you.
You mentioned like the bugs and all that stuff. Like when my oldest, when she was really young, she had a fascination for butterflies. And we still do. Like 2 days ago, or like on the weekend, we're like, we see a tiger swallowtail. We're both like, oh, look, tiger swallowtail.
We're on a hummingbird tip right now, because my wife put a bird feeding. So it's like hummingbirds, and they're just like, dad. It's this thing. They're yelling. I'm like, what, who lost a finger? And it's just like, no, there's a hummingbird. So, you know.
You actually answered one of my questions that I had, just about like, what is something that your kids have taught you? And it's like, don't lose the dinosaur, right? Don't lose that. And like, don't lose that innocence and see it from their perspective. So I got two more questions before the Father Quick Five now.
You got it.
Playing the NFL, man, and especially getting to where you at in acting, that's like, to me, that's almost like the Bo Jackson of like, I mean, yeah, he played baseball and football, but like, you got into the NFL and then now you're here on Netflix and have an awesome series. That's legit. Hard work, dedication. Obviously, those are values that you and your wife are going to instill into your kids. Talk about and create, and just like you said, creativity and learning more about things and questioning things is perfect. So besides that, talk about some of the other core values you're looking to instill into them.
I always said this, and this was before I had kids, and it's pretty much the same now with kids, is I always said, first things first, I want my kids to be funny. And I said that not because I'm like, oh, I want to be entertained. I say it because I want, for me, when you can do comedy, it shows a sign of intelligence, right? It's the ability to kind of see the world as it is and then take a step back and flip it upside down and then represent it to everybody, to where they're like, I recognize that. And it's really quirky that you did it in that way. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And for me, that's what it is. And that, so I always said, first and foremost, no matter what, become a doctor, become a shoe shiner, I don't care, be funny. Because that way, at the very least, I know you get it. I know you get life, you kind of see things, you're grounded, you kind of get it. So for me, that was the first thing. The other thing that I learned at an early age, and I would say this came from both my parents, but probably more so from my father, considering that he's an immigrant, I'm a first generation kid, and he came from Nigeria, and that's the concept of deferred gratification. I think in this society, we're all obsessed with this, I want it right now, I want it now. I want the success now. I want everything now, even though it hasn't been earned. And this idea that everybody kind of feels like they are a celebrity, right? And it's like, I don't consider myself anything, and I'm on TV. You know what I mean? And I don't consider that to be celebrity. To me, that's something that is abstract, that doesn't even really matter. But like, you have to work to kind of get up to those levels. The deferred gratification idea is putting in the work now to get the spoils later. And it's not, and it focuses more on the process and on the journey than on the outcome. And I think if you want to talk about NFL and acting, that's what that was. And I tell people all the time, I wasn't in love with football. I loved football, and I was into it because I was competitive, and I was talented in it, and I was given some God-given abilities that you can't teach, like height, strength, long arms, big ears to listen. But like all of those things came together and allowed me to do it. But it wasn't something that I was like absolutely in love with. I remember I was in the weight room once, and a guy was like, "Can you believe that we get paid to do this?" And I was like, yeah, we should get paid. This is hard. Like, this is not easy to do. But then when I became an actor and I finally got to do what I wanted to do, and which was acting, I realized like, that's what he meant. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's what it was. And so that kind of deferred gratification, the idea of being able to, I'm going to go through some stuff. I'm going to suffer for a bit to get to that point where I want. Muhammad Ali said it too, right? Where he was like, you suffer now and you can be a champion for the rest of your life. He hated working. I hate working out.
Yeah.
My wife can't believe it. She's a Pilates instructor. She can't believe it. She trains me at 4:30 in the morning every morning. I lift weights, I do Pilates, I run every single morning. And she's just like, "You get up at 4:30 in the morning to go work out and to do all these things and you hate it?" I was like, "I absolutely hate it." And she's like, "Well, then why do you do it?" And I said, "Because I love acting."
Yeah.
That's what it comes to, So that's the kind of stuff that you want to instill in your kids, that you want to put in, is that it's not all rainbows and lollipops. It's hard and it hurts and it's pain and it's rejection and it's failure and it's failure and it's failure and it's failure until the one time where it all comes together and it clicks and it's like, "Oh, wait, that's what it is." And then you win. And then when you win, you just keep winning because you built this base for yourself through all that suffering of understanding and knowing and how to like move like water, how to kind of adapt and understand and to grow and change. And then you have everlasting success as opposed to this flash in the pan thing. You know what I mean?
Like Bruce Lee, move like water, right?
I just read his book that his daughter wrote, and I just listened this morning to the YouTube talking about that. You know what I mean? Where it's like, you got to move. You can't sit there and be rigid. Now, water, its intention is rigid. Where I want to go, I want an Emmy. That's what that is. I want to do that. That's never going to change. But the method to get there, you have to be adaptable. It has to be able to say like, okay, this isn't the way, but maybe this way. Maybe this is the way in. You know what I mean? And change and figure it out. Instead of saying I can't, it's like, what can I do to change that? What can I do to fix it? Okay, I can't get the agent that I want, or I can't get the movie that I want, but what can I do? I can make a short, and then the short gets picked up and somebody likes it, and then they offer me something, and then that allows me to create my own thing later. It may take longer, but you're getting what you want and it's going to last,
And you appreciate it more because you had to work hard for it, right? And that's what you said. And something you said about there, just with your dad being an immigrant, I was listening to, I'm blanking on her name right now, but she did a story on Giannis, and the book's coming out like this month. And they were just talking about like how their family, who's going to eat, like what's going to happen. The mom, like they would not, like the parents would go 2 days without eating, right? And now that when Giannis came over here, he bought a PlayStation, and for like a week he was beating himself up. Like, why did I buy this? I always wanted video games when I was a kid and all this other stuff. And he's like, why did I do this? And to see him just everything, because everyone's like, he didn't go on a super team and he can't shoot three-pointers that well and free throws and whatever. But he did it his way. And it's kind of like he got it, right? So I love hearing those stories and passing that on to your kids of like, work hard for it and you'll appreciate it better. Because if you get something like that, what does it matter, right?
What is a kid who's, turns 15 and gets his permit and gets a box Mercedes going to do?
An accident and expect something else.
100%. Or kill someone else. And so my thing is like, what are you working for then? Like, you already have the box Mercedes. What's the motivation? Now, granted, money and everything else doesn't always have to be the motivation, but like, you already have the lifestyle. You got the dessert without eating the dinner. So now what? You know what I mean? So that's why that kind of thing. I remember my wife said this to me too, like a couple of years after we were married. She goes, "The kids aren't getting a new car when they're 16. I don't care how much money we have." She's like, "It's not going to happen." She's like, "They're getting a used, beat up car." She's like, "If I can find a Buick Roadmaster with wood paneling on the side, that's what I would give them when they turn 16. Like, yeah. And I love her for it because that's her swag. And she's like, "That's what I'm gonna do." And I was like, "I am with you. Whatever you decide, cool. But I don't want to talk to them about it." You
nice. One more question before we get. And again, things you're saying could be great pieces of advice for new dads, but if you have one big piece of advice for new dads, what would it be?
I'm fighting between patience and listen, right? Which possibly
you can do both. You can do both, man. That works.
Yeah, I would say patience and listening. This morning, Kara and I, my wife Caroline, Kara and I were talking, and she was like, you know, I can't get frustrated that the preschool is sending us these family projects that we have to do. And I was like, yeah, like we can't get frustrated that we have to make lunches every day now. Because before they were going to school like 2 days a week or 3 days a week. Now they go 4 days a week. And it's like, you can't get frustrated with that because that's your life now until for like the next 18 years. Like we're going to be, they're going to have school projects and we're going to do stuff. And it just gets more and more and more until they're finally gone and we retire. And happy. Anyway, but you know, but that's the thing is the patience has to be there. And you have to be able to be like, all right, what happened? Who hit who first and what's going on? As opposed to just kind of coming in like the typical dad and just barking at everything and like, everybody quiet and sit down and watch Mira, the greatest detective. You know what I mean? Like, okay, guys. So that kind of patience works, you know, when you're wanting to be frustrated. My father-in-law said, he's like, take a deep breath and then just ask what happened. The second thing, the listening part is huge because kids will tell you what's wrong. It may not be with words, but they'll always let you know when there's a problem in their behavior, what they do, the way they play, what they draw, you know, how they their perspective on things because they're brand new, they're a blank slate. So like on a blank canvas, if someone throws a color green on there, it's obvious, like you can see it. You know what I mean? Same thing with a kid, they're a blank slate. So if something's wrong, it's obvious, but you need to be willing to listen to that. And if you're willing to listen to that, it makes you a better parent. And listening with all your senses, like, you know, but I don't want to go to school, my stomach hurts. Is your stomach really hurt? Is somebody bullying you at school? Or is something happening at school? Or why don't you like school? You know what I mean? And that's kind of a thing. And same thing with a kid who's like, I just want to be home all the time. Why do you want to be home all the time? Yeah. I understand it's nice, but what are we spoiling you too much to where this is too nice and you don't want to go experience new things? That's a problem too, you know? Yeah. So I'd say that patience and listening.
Great, great piece of advice right there. And listening go, and so does patience, but listening also too, when they get older and like for my 13-year-old or 11-year-old, if they're like, oh, so-and-so is kind of mean to me. And like, if they're a really good friend, you'll get over it. And if they weren't your friend to begin with, then don't worry about it. You can't say that because you're not understanding where they're at. My wife and I were like, all right, why are you feeling this way? What's going on? Did you do anything? What was, you know, so having those instead of the yes, no questions, like you said, listening is going to be key no matter what age they are. So I really appreciate that, sir.
Thank you for that because I will put that in the bank when my kids turn 13 and I need that. So appreciate it.
Even the biggest thing, like you see the memes, is like, oh, my kid's talking about this YouTube channel again, or this kid's talking about like this video game.
Yeah.
You show that you care about that, like, because especially during this pandemic, we've been like the four of us has been doing a lot more stuff together. And even before that, we were caring. But it's just like we're learning more about each other. They're learning more about me and my wife, and I'm learning more about them, which is great.
Well, I think it goes hand in hand, right? Because you have those kids where it's like they're 16 and they do something stupid or like they're doing this. It's like, why didn't you talk to me about it? And it's like, because you're not interested in their life anyway. You don't like on Monday and Tuesday, you don't care like what they're watching or what they're doing. Cause you're like, oh great. I'm free now. And they're teenagers. So I'm just gonna let them do their thing. And then on Saturday, you expect them to tell you what they did at this party or why they got like, you know, drunk or underage, whatever. And
yeah,
that you it has to be 100%. You got to listen to them all the time. If they're into a show, just be like, oh cool. Why are you into this show? What about it? You learn their personalities. You learn who they are. And I think, now this is all philosophical. I have no teenagers, so I could be completely wrong. But I just think that's kind of the logical step that I would take in that sense, you know?
Okay, it's easier said than done because like I have a teenager and one's going to be another teenager. But like,
yeah,
I think you have the right method.
Okay.
Not that everyone's going to have. Not that it's always going to work 100%. Right.
Right.
But the idea of just being like, hey, so why do you like this video game? Well, you watch the show together. We'll make up fan fiction together. We'll do Dungeons and Dragons, right? And I will tell them things about the things I'm experiencing. And they're just like, okay, cool. So you have the right method.
Making sure you know each other, right? Yep. We're family. So it's like, as family, we can't just be like, yeah, so-and-so does his own thing. I don't know what he does in there. It's like, you should know. Like that. Yeah. You should know that. Yeah. So yeah, I get it. Okay, cool.
Love it. Here we go with the Fatherhood Quick Five. Favorite family movie. I know they're kind of young, but like, and maybe they don't stick through a whole movie, so it could be a TV show. What is it right now?
Favorite family movie. I would say between Monsters, Inc. and Finding Nemo.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they're technically old school stuff. They're just like, well, they're so young, like, you can't, like, there's so much stuff that's regulated that we can't, like, show them because they get scared if anything gets dark. They're like, eh. So you gotta, like, keep it easy. But yeah, I'd say
when Big Hero 6 came out, we went to the theater, and maybe it wasn't the best time for my youngest because she was freaking out. So
thank you. They love Big Hero 6 because I put it on, and then I was like, yeah, watch this, and they loved it. And then it was like it got dark or it got like kind of downer real quick, and so my son was like, Daddy, I was like, oh, this is wrong. And now they ask for it. My wife just looks at me like this every time. That was a fail on my part.
We've all been there. Favorite family song, or is there a band you can't wait to introduce them to?
I mentioned it earlier, but it was, there's two. So there's a theme song for this Mira, the world's greatest detective. It's like on Disney or something. And it's a great, it's like, a, let's hear it for Mira, royal detective. And so we all sing that, like throughout the day, everybody's humming it or singing yeah. at some point. And then my wife introduced Cloudy Day by Tones and I, and my daughter can't get enough of it. She's like, Alexa, play. Not you, Alexa, stop. So that song, she like loves it. So she listened to it. And before that, it was like Whitney Houston's Higher Love. Like she'll just, it'll come on and you just see my daughter and she's like, okay. And she's doing her thing. And so that's, yeah, the family song. We put it on, we're washing dishes, and the kids are doing puzzles or doing whatever, and we're all dancing and playing with it.
Nice, man.
Advice, always have music in your house.
Play, yeah, play. 100%, especially even when they're young, too. Whatever type of music, whatever the case may be, I think music is key. Love it.
Play it all the time.
No, the pandemic and all that stuff, people aren't really traveling, but describe the perfect family vacation. Where would it be for you guys?
Honestly, we got in just in time. We got this little window. It was mid-June to the end of June, June 16th to June 30th, this past June. We were able to fly out. First trip for my kids. Andy's flown before, but she was like younger. She was like a baby. But Axton, it was his first flight. And so we took them on the plane and we went to Boston and we went to Martha's Vineyard. And my father-in-law has a house there. And it was the best vacation ever. I mean, they were on the beach, you know, they went to like the zoo, they got to like play around, and I think they ate ice cream every single day. So it was like, it was hard when these little addicts came back home and they were like, can we have ice cream? We're like, no. They're like, why? We have ice cream all the time. It's like, no, we don't. That's on vacation. They finally get like the difference now between vacation and like at home. It's like, we can watch iPads in the car on vacation.
Yep.
We can do that on the way to school. You know what I mean? Yep. Oh. But I think that's pretty close. I'm excited for Disney, but I'm going to try and do it the smart way and not do Disney until they can actually remember it when they're like, yeah, like in seventh grade. I feel like it's a waste now at 4 and 3. It just feels like they'll be like, oh, that's great. And then Goofy will come up and be like, you'll freak out. And I'm not trying to like have it. So I'm going to wait till like 8, you know, 8 or 9, you know, in that area to where they actually can remember it and enjoy it.
I think
it.
We took them like when they were 7 and 5, my youngest really doesn't remember. And then like 2 years or 3 years ago, we went to Universal because we're all into Harry Potter and they just loved it. So you're smart. You're putting that money into it. Just wait and they'll appreciate it later.
Yeah, exactly. Good point.
Like I mentioned earlier, you know, when we're talking about the Fresh Prince, I'm a big sneakerhead. And I got to say, you and the cast on Family Reunion like have such a great sneaker collection. You're wearing some like awesome kicks. Are you a sneakerhead? So I just have to ask. So like, are you a sneakerhead? If so, especially playing in football, like being football, like maybe at your time, they didn't have the Jordan cleats and all that other stuff. But for you, did you have a favorite sneaker?
Yeah. So I became more of a sneakerhead when I got a job. When I moved to California, the culture really got me. I at first I was always into it, but you got to understand, I wear a size 16 shoe now, right? I wore like size 11 in like fourth or fifth grade. You know what I mean? So like I had a big foot my whole life, and I, you know, I'm an older guy. So I didn't have the internet growing up as a kid. So getting shoes was not a fun experience for me. It was like the David Robinsons that are neon green or like the Patrick Ewings that are like super black and just look like bricks on your feet. You know what I mean? And so there was no style whatsoever. It was just like, put these on, they fit. And so once the internet came along, and then I feel like prehistoric, once the internet
did, yeah, right.
once the internet came along and I was able to, you know, apps and everything else, and Nike kind of finally caught up and realized that, like, there's people walking around on the earth that have big feet too. It was great. And so I started to kind of, when I was in the NFL, I was on an Air Force One tip, and I had like 30 pairs of Air Force Ones. Like, I straight up was like every color, every combo. And then I was into S. Dot Carters for a minute. You know, the Reebok. Okay.
The Reebok ones. Yep. Yep.
My favorite S. Dots were like the baby blue with the gum bottom. And I was just like,
Carolina Blue Kick.
Oh my God. I loved it. I literally bought three pairs and only wore one of the pairs because I was just a beast. I love these shoes so much. Like, that gum bottom. And I every day I come in and be like, you know what I mean? So that
it's not just me. Thank you. It's not just me. Good.
Oh, no. That's a thing. That's a new shoe smell. So that was it. When I started acting and I came over here, it moved. I got rid of all my Air Force Ones and like sold them to some lucky person in like Nebraska who has big feet. But like here, it was like, you know, I had the Jordans started to come back, where Jordans started like pop off their like remakes and colorways and all that. So I got into that. And for me, my number one, more than anything, is the number one, Jordan Ones. Jordan Ones, you can't. I'm sorry, you can't make a better sneaker, a more evolved all around. I can wear this with anything sneaker. And so whenever I find a Jordan 1 that's just white on white, pure white, I have to get it because it's never around.
Yeah.
And two, like, I just love the silhouette. I think it's fantastic. After that, I would say my next favorite, I mean, of course, I could be a name dropper and be like, oh, the Concord 11s. Like, all right. But it's like, I think the Jordan 1 is big for me, and the 3s. I love the 3s.
Nice.
And I just got the 3 denims. I know they've been out for a minute, but it's like,
oh, nice.
I had to get them on GOAT in my size, and it was like hard, and I finally like got them. But yeah, I think my wife counted the other day. I think I have like 32 pairs of Jordans, like all around. I'm the worst. I know. I'm the worst person. And I'm going to get roasted for this. I know people are starving. I understand that.
No. Anthony?
Yeah.
I got way more. I got way more
sneakers. Good.
So, no. If everyone's going to – yeah.
She's a bad person.
Yeah. You can blame me. I'll take it. I got married in the 11s, the black and red 11s.
Yes.
11s, okay. 1s, 3s, 4s, and 5s are my favorite. Like, I got a bunch of 5s and a bunch of 11s I'm looking at.
5 and under are always the tops. Like, to me, the designs were at their best at that point. Yeah. I newer Jordan designs, I'm like – Why are you doing this?
And lastly, top three words you hope your kids would use to describe you as a dad, what would they be?
Oh God.
Sorry.
It's like immediately you're emotional. I would say patient, funny, just super loving.
Nice. You know what I mean? Patience and listen. Yeah, patience and loving and all that and there is perfect. I love it. Tell people where they can find you on social media, sir.
All right. So on Instagram, I'm still like, I'm fighting TikTok. Like, I should be on it, but I'm fighting it. I'm like, I don't want to. I'm on the other side millennial. I'm like that side millennial. I'm like the millennial that still remembers like no cell phones. I'm on Instagram, Anthony Alabi Official. I'm on Twitter, at Anthony Alabi, and YouTube, Muttisucka, my writing partner and I, we have our sketches, which now I think we're getting into some stuff. So we're going to be a lot more like Lonely Island and
oh, nice.
Make some longer form stuff and some good stuff coming out. So, you know, we'll see, we'll play with that and see how everybody likes it. But yeah, that's where you'll find me. YouTube, Muttisucka, and IG and Twitter.
Very cool. I appreciate the time. I really enjoyed your fatherhood journey and just sharing that. And of course, the great things that you're doing with the show and your team over at Netflix on Family Reunion. My family and I love it. I know a bunch of people love it. We want more and more seasons. More and more seasons, but I wish you and your family continued success, sir.
Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate you guys watching, and thanks for all the support.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and go to theartoffatherhood.net.